Welcome to the Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League podcast. We are here to talk about the events of Game Week 3 and look ahead to Game Week 4. I, of course, am Brandon, and I'm here with my co-host, Josh.
Hey, Brandon.
Josh, are you happy this week or are you sad?
I am happy. I had to wild card a little earlier than I planned to. Anytime you're wild carding before week three, things have not gone exactly according to plan.
I think early wild cards are not terribly uncommon.
I have traditionally wild carded pretty early, but I don't think I've ever done it before the third week of the season. But it was a good week, much like before the start of the season. You want to focus on the good things, not the negatives, right? Like, a lot of players who performed really well this weekend are players that I had on my wildcard team at one time or another. And you just have to block that out. Because I scored 57 points, which is 12 above average. Got goals from three different players, which were three more goals than my team had scored before Game Week 3. I think I had one assist total. And that was like a Tridini assist in game week one.
So you got more goals in game week three just from your defensive back line than you had the rest of your squad the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, I got infinity percent more goals this week. And when the week was finally over, I jumped. I don't know if I've ever actually been this low. I was at 2.8 million. I've jumped up to 2,081,000. So I've jumped about 730,000 spots, I guess, total.
So that's one step closer to your goal of finishing in the top 2 million.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I just want to get into the fantasy Premier League Cup that they have every year, starting the week, whatever.
So did you have any inkling that I was also going to play my wild card this week?
No, because you gave no inkling.
this is something we occasionally argue about, because I'm very cagey and don't like to talk about my transfers. I try to be very I try to employ a lot of gamesmanship.
Right, and I walk around agonizing to anybody who will listen about exactly what moves I plan to make, what might go wrong with those moves, why I can never win. You know, it's really, even like when I'm doing well, I'm just agonizing, like there's no winning for me.
Yeah. I feel like I always do play my wild card very early in the season. And for me, I think there's really no other way to do it, because there's always that feeling, usually two or maybe three or four, if you're lucky, weeks into it, where you feel like you finally do have a feel of what players are going to shake out, what teams are in form. Like, the Community Shield, as we know, is not a barometer that we can really rely upon.
Yeah, I had thought that before week four, there was a chance that I might do it, because I had assumed that Man City would start slowly because they were, you know, away to Stoke, home to Chelsea, and away to Everton the first three games, right? These are not easy fixtures. They're not bankable. The team didn't change very much in the offseason, so I thought, all right, I'm not going to invest at all in Man City. And then in week four, I'll bring in Aguero and, you know, maybe another midfielder. Like, we'll see.
Yeah, I felt the same way. And because City, nobody in our 17-person mini league had a Manchester City player to speak of. And then after one, two game weeks, everyone just had this Manchester City size hole in their squad. I saw no other way. Well, on top of Manchester City, to play the wild card, there were going to be a lot of key players with price rises happening immediately.
Sure.
That you really had to get on board with early. Aguero, not even playing a full match, went up by 0.1 million.
It's very interesting, too. Contrasted with Chelsea, who had a, you know, basically a terrible start to the season. Chelsea didn't bring in that many players, and they look exhausted and in need of fresh blood, which they actually got with Pedro this week. Man City, the only change they really made was bringing in Raheem Sterling, who looked a little better at game three, but wasn't a difference maker in the first two game weeks. And it's just interesting how one team looks like they're, you know, in midseason form, the other team looks like the last season never ended.
Yeah, no, it's so true. So, speaking of winners and losers, let's touch upon our MVPs and losers of the week before we jump into Game Week 3's fixtures. Anybody really please you this week?
Well,
I mean, fantasy-wise. Yeah.
So I was pretty excited. Something like the 85th.
I mean, fantasy Premier League-wise.
Just any fantasy. Raheem Mahrez really pleased me in every way, really, fantasy and otherwise.
He's not a bad-looking dude. He also pleases me because every time I see his name, I think of the great college radio music act, Jason Mahrez. So I'm always imagining Raheem Mahrez on the field wearing a trucker hat and maybe playing an acoustic guitar.
And I think we're saying his name right. It's Riyad Mahrez, right? It's a hard one to get down.
It's another one to throw in the Bournemouth category.
So I brought in Mahrez, and I mean, a total bandwagon pick, right? But when I made my wild card, he was actually the first player I put on my team, you know, partially because you know, I thought his price was going to rise, but also, I mean, the fixtures for Leicester coming up are excellent, and he you know, finished last year really strong. I mean, I should have just had him on my team to begin with, really. I mean, at 5.5, he's just an incredible bargain.
Well, that's hindsight is 20/20 right there.
Yeah, but if you watch the first two games and this Tottenham game, I mean, he is running that offense.
Yes, hindsight in the last three games. I mean, I don't think you can say that, well, I definitely should have had him on my team from the start.
No, maybe not, but certainly one to think about at that price, right? I mean, if you were 8 or 9, then obviously that's
he is the quintessential bandwagon player, and in the best way. I mean, if he keeps it up, he's the Harry Kane of this season. And I actually transferred him into my squad on Sunday because he had maxed out his value gain at 5.8 because you're only able to price rise 0.3 million in 1 week.
Yeah.
So, and now he's already up to 5.9. Yeah. Now, on top of his form being red hot, his price is red hot, and I knew I just had to get him in because so many times with bandwagon players, you try to ride it out. There's been a lot of people talking about this as far as Harry Kane, and I was guilty of it last season. Of like, well, there's no way Kane can keep it up, and that's only going to burn you, and you're only going to just feel like garbage every weekend when you get out of bed and you see he scored another goal. So yeah. I just wasn't going to mess around.
Yeah, it's looking a little bit like two seasons ago at the moment, where you jump in a bandwagon and that player just keeps performing. You know, Yaya Toure,
Aaron Ramsey,
and Luis Suarez a couple years ago. It was just everyone jumped in those bandwagons and they just delivered week in and week out. You know, Vincent Kompany is the same way right now. And Kolarov, I mean, the Kolarov one kills me because that was one of the last moves I made. Before I finalize my team, I have this thing about I don't like to have defenders who aren't guaranteed starts, especially if they're over, you know, if I'm planning to play them week in and week out.
Yeah.
And, you know, Kolarov, you know, so Bakary Sagna was back on the bench not Bakary Sagna.
Gael Clichy
was back on the bench.
That's not the first time you've made that mistake. This podcast.
It's very confusing, right? It's too, you know, two French fullbacks who played for Arsenal. You know, it's easy to get them confused. And
we'll give it to you.
So he was back on the bench. And there's, you know, as anyone who's had Kolarov in previous years knows, you just never know. You never know if he's going to start. I mean, you bring him in and he'll score a goal and have a clean sheet and look like the best player on the pitch and take like all the free kicks.
Yeah.
And then he won't start for 2 weeks in a row.
It is a strange phenomenon, isn't it? I mean, it's being a specialist, I guess. Like, I don't know if you watched the end of that Sunderland-Swansea game where they brought in Seb Larsson just to take the final kick of the game.
Right, right.
But if you're a free kick specialist is just a wingback and a streaky one at that, on a stacked team like Manchester City, it always takes me off guard. Like, Kolarov's going to come up and take this one.
Exactly. So I brought in I took him out and brought in Luke Shaw. So it wasn't a complete disaster.
Just so we can keep the MVP thread running, I was going to say that Luke Shaw is actually my MVP of the week because coincidentally we both brought in Luke Shaw in our wild cards. And because United just has this great run of clean sheets that they're stringing together.
And you just knew, I mean, at home to Newcastle, like, it just seemed like such a complete gimme.
Yeah.
That clean sheet.
And Luke Shaw has...
almost gave it up in the last, like, 3 minutes of the game. I don't know if you
I was
saw
positive they were going to give it up.
It's a 3-on-1. I don't know how they didn't score. It's an actual... And actually, I think he made a late clearance, which gave him just enough...
for a bonus point.
To get his one bonus point, despite having a yellow card.
Yeah, no, that is beautiful. But I was pleased to see his performance, because he was playing well, he was getting forward, he was involved in the attack, and he hasn't been able to stay healthy for the last 2 years.
Yeah.
And if he's a constant starter and you got him early at 5.5, I see his price has already gone up to 5.6.
Yeah, I think it actually went up to 5.6 last week. Now, the question for me is, he actually may be a one-week player for me. I'm not sure that I'm actually going to keep him. If I make a transfer this week, it would be Luke Shaw out. Because they're at Swansea, and I just don't see a clean sheet there. Although, God, it's so hard to know right now.
He crosses the ball in, so you have to take the good with the bad, right? Okay, so like we were saying, United hosting Newcastle, they could have given up the clean sheet. But so long as Shaw has attacking potential, he could get you an assist. I mean, look at your beloved Cesar Azpilicueta.
that's I know. I mean, who would have thought that? Geez, yeah, I can't believe how well that's worked out for me so far.
It makes me want to throw up, to be honest with you.
Oh, that goal he scored. It was a crazy goal. His first goal in the Premier League, that was, I was so excited.
I have had him in so many fantasy squads and never. Just total garbage. Okay, so who's your loser of the week?
Right, okay, so my loser of the week is actually also on Man U. It was Memphis Depay. Another late move for me. I took out Yaya Toure. I was going to have a stacked Man City forward attack, and I brought in Depay, and I just thought, well,
you saw the Chinese financial crisis happening, and you thought, I need to diversify, right?
Yeah, I did. I wanted more color in my team. It was all blue and light blue. I wanted some red in there. Just at home to Newcastle without Daily Blind, it just seemed like a great opportunity for him to finally pick up. You know, he scored two goals in midweek.
Two goals and an assist against Bruges in the Champions League. You think he was going to ride that form into a home match, and he looked just like he did the first 2 weeks. Very tentative.
Right. I meant Jan Mott, by the way, not Blind.
Oh, well, I can see how you'd mix those two up.
Right. Yeah. This is just good. This is just good radio right here.
It's all good stuff. So listen, I had a loser. I'm gonna pick out my loser in the midfield this week, and it's going to Jefferson Montero, because I brought him in. As listeners to the first couple weeks of the Always Cheating podcast know, I was a huge fan of his performance against Chelsea, and he was one. Speaking of guys who had great last season, end of season form last season, Jefferson Montero looked really good coming into the Swansea team last year.
Right, away to a Sunderland team that's been chipping goals.
Yeah, they have had a leaky defense. I mean, I know Sunderland could show up any given week, especially when they're at home. But I figured at 6.0, worth a punt, and I was ready to put my money where my mouth is, and he looked really tentative. He did not look at all. It was just like a total bait and switch. He did not look like the player that I had seen the previous 2 weeks. I'm very disappointed. He gets 2 points. He didn't. He had a couple shots on target. But he just really didn't look confident in his service or any of those shots that he took. So he is out for Mraz immediately.
I think that's a really easy transfer. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, and I gained money in that transfer as well. So
saving money. You're saving money. You're making early transfers. I like it.
It's a Geico commercial.
It's one of those rare weeks where the transfer it makes itself, right? I mean, there's no point waiting until Friday. That is just an easy move. There's no, like, there's price rises and all that, but it's just like that one's just like undoubted, right? I mean, I guess if one of them plays,
it is so undoubted. And because if you know, a lot of people played their wild card very early, even more people are going to play their wild card going into game week 4. And guess who's going to be the first player that everybody picks up?
Yeah.
So I mean, have to cover yourself.
Yeah, right? There's going to be a real template in a couple of weeks with all these wild cards being played. I mean, everyone's going to have Yaya Toure, Kolarov or Vincent Kompany if you want a little more security. Sergio Aguero is going to meet every team. I mean, it's the problem is the people start to complain about this, but you know, having a template is actually a good thing. If you're knowing what the template is it actually gives you room to operate. Like you just have to, like, you want there to be a template, because the template usually is not going to work out in those people's favor long term, because they're not going to be willing to to move from the template. Having a template in place actually makes it easier to play everybody else, I think, because you now know who everyone's going to have. And if if you need to make up ground, you know to drop those players, you know, if the fixtures look like they're not going to be great. I mean, Yaya Toure long term shouldn't be bringing in 6 to 10 points every week. I mean, that's just not, you know, where he is in that offense. You know, at his age, I mean, it's just...
Yeah, and we'll get to that when we're going to talk about the Everton-Man City game and where Toure fit into all that. But I think you're right. It is an anomaly that Silva and Aguero didn't get any attacking points in this squad. I mean, you've said it, and many pundits have said it, that Yaya Toure doesn't play as well when Aguero is up front.
Yeah, well, and he looked great against Everton, so who knows? But one would think that unless he's found whatever magic he had 2 years ago, that this is like kind of a blip. I mean, we're 3 weeks in, right? You don't want to draw any long-term 38-week conclusions from anything, right? I mean, we all know that within the next 2 or 3 weeks, something's going to happen to Sergio Aguero, and he's going to be out for the next 6 weeks, right? I mean, that guy is... he's like Jack Wilshere. It's just like, the style that he plays, the aggression in his game, it's always going to lead to injuries. And, you know, you just have to, like, you can never get too caught up in thinking that this is so-and-so's year, because players get injured, formations change. And I really think nimbleness is the key to climbing up to the top of your league.
I think what you're saying there is all of us will have Wilfred Bony in our team at some point this season.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, if Aguero's injured, then Bony is really the only forward in that team, right? I mean, I guess you could play Raheem Sterling as a forward.
Yeah, I guess that would be the plan.
You know, they're bringing in what's his name from Wolfsburg,
De Bruyne.
Yeah, they're bringing in De Bruyne, so I guess that, you know, he can play as a forward, too. I mean, he's not necessarily a forward. I don't know. So, I mean, I guess they could just go with a forwardless rotation if Aguero was out. But, you know, really...
Barcelona-style.
Yeah, Barcelona-style. But yeah, that's assuming that Bony isn't there. I mean, if Aguero's out, then Bony becomes incredibly valuable.
Wow, that sounds like a great folk song. Really, Bony wasn't there.
Bony wasn't there. I felt like it took me 8,000 words to say that. Like I to say something that should have taken like one sentence.
Don't worry, we'll put it into a blog post, and people can read it and reread it. All right, Josh, let's jump to game week 3. Let's talk about these fixtures that happen. We're going to call out 3 fixtures in particular and talk about them in some detail.
Okay.
But first, let's just... we kind of touched upon the 0-0 draw with United hosting Newcastle and our disappointment with Memphis Depay there. Do you see any chance that Depay is going to...
work out? He's going to stay on my team this week. Speaking of differentials,
he's got to be a differential now because a lot of people surely have dumped him.
Yeah, but I mean, there are just so many Man U fans. I mean, I think his ownership rate is still probably above 20%.
Hey, I just met my new downstairs neighbor, and it turns out he's a Man United fan.
Oh, interesting.
He was giving me the hard sell on Memphis Depay.
Oh, really? Does he want to join the fantasy league?
We're not there yet, Josh. I can't have that. There's only room for one always cheating manager in my building.
Sure. No, completely understandable. This is something I started to get into a moment ago when I was talking about Luke Shaw. At some point, Man United is going to have to start scoring goals. And when they do, they're going to have to, you know, loosen up loosen up the defense a little bit, commit more people forward, change the formation. I mean, I don't totally understand why they're not scoring more. I mean, it seems like it's really more of a Wayne Rooney problem than anything else. I don't know that the formation is...
Yeah, their tempo just doesn't seem to be up enough. I think the ball is moving a little too slowly. I mean, Wayne Rooney obviously doesn't look like he's on it. But they just need to move it a little quicker, and I think you're right. Maybe getting the defense to push up and press a little more might help.
I don't understand why Ander Herrera isn't playing more. But you know, I don't know how valuable he is from a fantasy perspective. Anyways, his price is really low at this point. Is that a 6.8? Marino Fellaini.
Yeah, he had a great shot conversion percentage when he started with the Man U last season. I remember. I think it probably tailed off toward the end of the season. But
yeah, and he was injured a lot last year too. But Fellaini finally comes back from his suspension, and that could be really interesting. He's available for 6.5, and there's at least a chance I would think that he slots right back into the starting lineup.
They need a spark.
Yeah, and if there's a 6 point, you know, if he's playing further forward in kind of a Yaya Toure role, then you know, he could really be someone to keep an eye out for.
So moving on, we got Crystal Palace beat Villa 2-1. I lost a clean sheet there for my main man Joel Ward. Speaking of bandwagons, I don't understand why he doesn't score a goal every week. That was disappointing. No, okay, so that was okay. This reminds me of my classic FPL moment on Saturday morning when there was a good 15-point turnaround for me within the span of 5 minutes, where I lose a clean sheet with Joel Ward. The next instant, I lose a clean sheet with Robert Huth, Leicester versus Spurs. And then at the very same moment, Mraz scores his goal. You have him on your team. So I lose two clean sheets. You get a goal from your midfielder with bonus points to boot.
Yeah, all three. Yeah, that was brutal. I was surprised how many people jumped on the Crystal Palace bandwagon this week. Their fixtures, they had the one game to Aston Villa, but then you really have to, and you can't play him for the next... I mean, I guess away at Watford in week 7 is the next time you'd want to play him. Week 4 is away to Chelsea. Week 5, home to Man City. Week 6 is away to Spurs. Maybe you could play him at Spurs, because Spurs are terrible, as we mentioned before. But, you know, it just seems like you're going to have to bury him in your bench for the next few weeks. I mean, I know it's not you, but it seems like a lot of people are talking about.
I guess you just can't bury. There's no way you're going to be able to field three defenders every week where they've got a potential clean sheet, like, guaranteed. So I like Crystal Palace looks organized. They could miraculously pull off a clean sheet at any moment. And if you've got a defender who also then, like we were talking about with Luke Shaw, has some attacking potential at 4.5, for me, it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, well, fair enough. I went with Russell Martin, who worked out incredibly well.
My own George R. Russell Martin, you stole my move.
I couldn't believe it. I couldn't believe you didn't keep him.
I did keep him. He's just on my bench.
Oh, he was on your bench. Okay. So why don't we go right to that game? The Norwich Stoke City match, which was actually a pretty interesting game.
Yeah, I actually didn't watch that one, so you're going to have to fill me in all the gory details.
Well, Norwich probably should have won. Jack Butland was incredible, and I had him as my keeper in that game. It was kind of bittersweet because I lost my clean sheet when Russell Martin scored the goal. So, you know, it's kind of in the end, you always want to. I'm always willing to take 6 points from a defender. But I got 4 out of Butland, which is pretty good, you know, considered a goal.
Let's see. Let's do the math there. So with Martin, you get 6. With Butland, you get 4. So that's 10. So that's an even split of 5-5. So. That's not as good as 2 clean sheets.
We'll give you that. Yeah, that's true. But I think, but at that point, Stoke had already scored. So I, you know, the clean sheet on one side was already lost. So it wasn't, you know, it wasn't so bad. I couldn't believe it though. So I was so gun shy, like, because no one on my team had scored the first 2 weeks of the season. When I saw on Twitter that Martin had scored, I actually went to the Crystal Palace section of the Fantasy Premier League site and looked to see if there's anyone else named Martin on the team. Like, to see if there was,
the Norwich section, you mean.
The Norwich section. And I was, you know, I'm looking through it. I'm like, is there a Martin in the midfield? Like, did they bring in a Martin for the forward? I was like,
Was it Martin Lawrence?
A player from my team had finally scored a goal this year. So yeah, two goals in a row for Martin, which is crazy. You know, pretty really a valuable someone that people should think about bringing in because he's 4.5 million. Norwich's fixtures the next several weeks are excellent.
He is the captain, so he's a guaranteed start for the whole season.
Yep, going to start the whole season. Kind of looks like that guy from Firefly. You know that show Firefly? Ever watch that?
Yeah. Nathan Fillion.
Yes, exactly. That's who it is. So, yeah, player definitely worth keeping an eye on.
He's also the author of the hit series The Song of Ice and Fire.
That's right. Exactly.
And now tell me about how Shaqiri looked. So you watched the game. I didn't. And this was his first game for Stoke. Yep. Former Bayern Munich player.
Yeah, he looked excellent. Stoke's fixtures coming up are also excellent.
Did he look 4.5 feet tall or 5 feet tall?
A 4'8", you know, a solid 4'8". I mean, he looks like a rugby player. You know, he's all neck. Just, you know, he looks like, I mean, he's got a very unusual body for a soccer player. It just doesn't have that, like, he's not lean at all. He's
He could tuck his head between his legs and he could just, like, roll down the field.
Yeah, basically, yeah. So he looks excellent. And, you know, he's a player I've long loved. You know, he's the star of that Switzerland team.
Yeah, I mean, he had a great World Cup.
At $7 million, it's a bit tricky. I mean, $7 million,
you're going to need a consistent.
It's a tough one. Yeah, it depends on what your midfield looks like. You know, I like a bigger midfield. I like to have, like, the top players who are consistently scoring. I'm not sure that you're going to get goals. I think it's just too early to judge with him, really. I mean, if he...
Was he playing more out on the wings or down the middle or a little of both? Was he kind of all over the place?
I think he was all over the place. I guess he was playing in the middle primarily. I guess he was subbing in for Jonathan Walters. Although, I mean, at this point, I would be surprised if he didn't start every game.
And there was some talk of Jonathan Walters being transferred to some team lower down the table.
I still can't think of Jonathan Walters without thinking of every time I think of Jonathan Walters. In fact, it's actually hard for me to have him in my team because I always think of that game where he missed two penalties and had an own goal.
Yeah, yeah.
What has to be the worst game that anyone's ever had in the Premier League, right? I mean,
it's up there.
It's got to be up there. I mean. You know, I mean, an own goal and two missed penalties. I mean, like, I don't know how you could.
I triple captained him that week.
So that okay. Stoke team is you know, I don't know. It still feels a little risky to invest in that team right now because they have so many new players. I mean, they've got this weird, like, Barcelona in the North thing going on where they keep, you know, picking up all of these players who washed out at top clubs in Europe.
Yeah, Diouf may be the guy, though. 4.3% ownership at 6.5, and he's got two goals now to his name.
He's a little like Benteke. I mean, he's a huge body, you know, really aggressive. You know, it's going to score a lot of headed goals this year.
Yeah, good target, man.
Yeah, good target, man. So, yeah, I think Diouf is someone to keep an eye out for. I mean, the two goals he scored so far have been on headers. He scored the late goal at Tottenham 2 weeks ago, and then the goal he scored this week was off a Shaqiri free kick. So, he's an interesting player. He kind of looks cool, too. Like, he's just sort of a fun player to have in your team.
Any guy that wears a colorful sweatband on his wrist, he's all good in my book.
Yeah. Did you like Negredo then? Remember, Alvaro Negredo, remember, he used to have great wristbands.
Love Negredo. He also had that really cool, like, rosary bead tattoo on his forearm.
Yeah, that guy was badass.
Okay, so the other enticing player in this match is going to be Nathan Redmond, who finally put in a 90-minute shift for Norwich. And I said last week on the podcast, if he scored 3 for 3, if he scored a third goal this week, I would call him Nene for the rest of the season. He only got an assist.
But he almost scored a couple of goals. I mean, and did you hear this thing about Butland, too, where apparently he broke a finger on his left hand?
I did hear this, yeah. Played through the pain.
Incredible. And not listed as a doubt right now. So I guess he's just going to keep playing through it.
It was never in doubt, Josh. Okay, so that's one of our highlight fixtures. I kind of lamented the Swansea-Sunderland game there. Swansea looked like a little bit of the air had come out of them. But we both brought in Gomez during our wild card, and he did deliver a goal. I was very close to captaining him in this game.
Yeah, I thought about it too. Very interesting, yeah, scoreline for Gamesa far. 666.
Mark of the Beast.
Yeah, he scored in every game, but the problem is he does nothing else, and he's offside a lot. So he's not going to be a bonus point magnet this year. But it looks like he's the center of that attack. He should have scored a second goal late. If he'd scored that, I'm sure he would be on 3 bonus points. So, yeah.
Now we got West Ham Bournemouth 3-4. I pity anyone who has brought in a bunch of West Ham assets. There's one guy in the Always Cheating Mini League who spent his wild card after game week one and loaded himself up with West Ham players. Mm-hmm. And West Ham is looking like dog shit right now.
We mentioned this on our Twitter page, but it's possible we may have read too much into an awesome performance against Arsenal. Like, if a team performs well against the Arsenal defense,
Reece Oxford will learn out for me.
They're a good team.
No, yeah, it's very true. But Wilson with the hat trick, Colin Wilson coming up as a great goal scorer in the championship, and he gets his hat trick in their third game. And I don't know. It probably won't keep up, right?
Yeah, that bandwagon seems a little full to me. I mean, I guess if you had a player, if you had a 6 million defender or 6.5 million, if you had somebody who wasn't really performing for you so far, then that's an obvious pick. Mm-hmm. I mean, I guess if I were wildcarding this week, I probably would have brought him in instead of Troy Deeney, who I did bring in.
Now, by
the
way,
ever since you made the joke that Troy Deeney sounds like a
magician,
like a Brazilian, like a Brazilian midfielder, that's how I hear it in my head now. It's always Troy Deeney.
Yeah, no, that's the way I like it.
I am surprised that Watford hasn't the last two games. They've actually looked threatening in both games. I don't know. I'm probably going to cut bait on the Troy Deeney experience sometime soon. I don't know when it could happen, though. I think.
I mean, I guess you need to invest in a Watford defender, right? They close up shop back there.
And the problem with having a cheap third forward is it takes forever to get them out of your team.
Yeah.
Because unless there's an obvious move, and I'm not sure that moving Deeney to Callum Wilson is the obvious move right now, even though Bournemouth have pretty good. I'm actually starting to talk myself into this Callum Wilson thing. I've gone in a circle as we talk about
live
it.
On air. It's like War of the Worlds.
I mean, Deeney is away at Man City next week, so if you can get away with not playing him, you would. But after that, it's home to Swansea, away to Newcastle, home to Crystal Palace, away to Bournemouth. All games where you'd happily start him. Then it's home to Arsenal, away to Stoke. I don't know. I may get off the Deeney Express right now. I may stay on. Kind of depends on what
it's
I do.
It's moving slow enough that you could just sort of step off, I think.
I want the rest of the podcast to be 20 minutes of me talking about the pluses and minuses of moving Troy Deeney into Callum Wilson. Because 5.5, I mean, let's take a quick look here. At the sub 6 price point, you're talking about Wilson or Kone. Wilson, Kone, Defoe, Jeremy Vardy are the players you'd be looking at.
Okay, I would have to go with Vardy out of that group.
Well, Kone is interesting if you can wait a couple more weeks, because Kone in, let's see here, Everton have a couple of tough fixtures. They're away to Spurs and home to Chelsea. And then even away to Swansea isn't great. And in fact, actually looking at it, really, if you could wait until week 11, that would be the time to bring in Kone.
Yeah. Because, my bigger concern would be, is Kone going to start in all of those games or even play? I mean, he's got that Wigan connection with Robert Benitez, and
right. He's looked good.
He was injured last season.
He looked pretty good in the Man City game too.
Yeah.
But if you can wait until week 11, if you've got incredible patience, or if you just want to bring in somebody else in the meantime, week 11 through week 18 is home to Sunderland, away to West Ham, home to Aston Villa, away to Bournemouth, home to Crystal Palace, away to Norwich, home to Leicester, away to Newcastle. Yeah. I mean, you would want two or three different Everton defenders for that run, I would think. You definitely want a defender. You'd probably want an attacker. I mean, I may load up heading into week 11.
I'll make a mental note.
Yeah, please do.
I mean, do you remember
it all away.
Do you remember the pleasures of fielding Kone that season that Wigan went down? And it was like the last 5 weeks Kone could not stop scoring goals.
Yeah. Was he the one who scored the goal in the FA Cup final? No, it wasn't. It was some, I feel like it was some defender or something. Remember, it was a one. It was a 1-0 game, the final. And
yeah, scored, like, you're really testing minute. My memory here. I mean, Nathan Phil and I had to Wikipedia, so. Okay, let's move on the Game Week 3 fixtures. West Brom-Chelsea, 2-3. Diego Costa finally got on the score sheet. And then, of course, Pedro. We can't not talk about Pedro.
Yeah, and that mustache. What a mustache. I mean, that is a classic mustache. I mean, that is like someone
like he's on the California Highway Patrol.
It really is. I mean, like when your mom gets divorced and starts dating somebody new, he looks like Pedro, right?
It's how awesome, like, would that be if your mom brought Pedro home?
I mean, he looks about 39.
Yeah, he looks like he's been places. He's seen shit.
He looks like a normal guy. Like Pedro, I always felt like the most boring player on Barcelona for some reason. There's just nothing like interesting about him. Pedro at 9.5 million didn't get too much fanfare. I will say, I felt like it wasn't like, I don't know. I mean, like, he's a great player. I mean, I felt like when
he could be Sanchez-esque this season. Yeah, really.
Exactly. I mean, Sanchez got so much fanfare when he joined Arsenal last year, and Pedro kind of joined, and it was kind of a shrug. They just needed somebody like him, and he was so direct.
I wonder if the anticlimax was everyone had been talking about him going to Man United for so long, and then Chelsea did their classic swoop in and take the booty.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
Maybe that's just soured the whole story.
They're like the bald eagles of the Premier League. They just they swoop in and take somebody else's food.
All right, now we really wanted to talk about this fixture between Everton and Man City. City winning 2-0 away at Goodison Park.
You may really want to talk about it. I actually thought it was a slightly boring game, to be honest. I felt like Man City just squeezed the life out of Everton as that game went on. I mean, they looked so strong in that game. I mean, it was. There was no moment when you felt like Everton was going to win that game.
Yeah, it was.
I mean, I guess there was the offside goal for Lukaku early on, mm-hmm. but pretty clearly offside, right? I mean, assuming that you felt like play was impeded in some way.
It was sort of the light version of Chelsea Man City from the previous week, where. Man City always looked in control, but it was, like you were saying, just a matter of them tightening the vice. And Aguero was getting all this great service right in front of goal, and he just could not slot the ball past Tim Howard.
Yeah,
just like Begovic was shutting him down in the first half of that Chelsea game.
Yeah, I mean, we both brought in Aguero and Silva, and I didn't get any points from other player, but I certainly couldn't feel bad about having them. I mean, Silva almost scored in the second half.
Yeah, I mean, the big takeaway from that game was Silva is the greatest player in the Premier League right now.
He's such a great player to watch.
Yeah.
Like, he's just fun. He's fun to have on your team because you get to root for someone who is so creative. And
he also looks cool. Always finds seems space. Like a nice guy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's awesome.
I'm definitely inviting him to my birthday. I guess the other thing you can say about this game is we were so high on Everton last week. I think we all knew Everton then coming into the City game. There was going to be there was going to be a downturn in returns, right?
Yeah, they were the market correction team this week. I mean, a lot of the other bandwagon players performed, and Everton's players didn't. Lukaku still looked pretty good.
They did. The whole team looked. They still looked organized and kept their shape. They didn't look bad. I feel like they will get something from this game, and that they won't lose that form that you saw the previous week.
The question is, what happens if John Stones, who apparently turned in a transfer request today to Everton to make a move to Chelsea, if he leaves, then I don't know what that defense looks like, because you'll have Baines is out for several weeks.
What's up with Galway? Because he had to be stretchered up.
So Galway is, he's listed at 75% right now. So I'm not actually sure. If this guy Browning slots in, if Tyus Browning comes in, then he's 4 million, which would be if you get a starting defender on Everton for 4 million, that would be pretty phenomenal.
And now they showed this guy on screen on NBC about 5,000 times during this match, but I still didn't soak in what exactly his name is, this new central defender that Everton brought in to replace John Stones.
Right.
Let's see. Has he been posted to the game yet? Do we know how much he costs? Okay, so it looks like they haven't posted him to the game yet, but the mysterious man from a European league will be slotting into that central defense. I don't know how seamless it will be. I mean, John Stones is by reputation a great central defender. He hasn't blown me away to start the season. He was at fault for at least one of those goals in game week one.
Yeah, it's.
Meaning I don't think that Everton's going to lose a great deal.
Yeah, but I mean, he's still a player to replace, you know? I mean, it's still a, you know.
They lose a lot long term. In the short term, fantasy wise, maybe not. You probably don't have to rethink your entire approach.
It makes Seamus Coleman less tempting, I suppose. Although I thought he looked great in that game. Seamus Coleman is the one who, I thought if they were going to score against Man City, I think Seamus Coleman would have been involved in the scoring in some capacity, whether he was, with an assist or a goal zone. So he's somewhat interesting. But you know, if that defense is going to lose a couple more players, I guess you just have to stay away at least until.
Yeah. So for City like you, I was a little scared off of Kolarov, but I wanted some defensive coverage. I ended up bringing in Joe Hart as my starting keeper, and I'm feeling pretty good about that. However, you do lose that attacking potential that a Kolarov or any other or company would give you.
Yeah, I mean, you probably won't regret it because the next 5 or 6 weeks you're really going to be. You're going to love having him on your team.
I had to wait until this week to get my only clean sheets of the game, and I got Luke Shaw and Joe Hart, and these clean sheets have been a long time coming, and I'm just going to be happy to have at least one player that I can set and forget.
Yeah. And then if you want, you know, if you need money in a few weeks' time, at 5.5 million, you could probably bring in someone for a million cheaper and move that money into the midfield or
line
or something like
now, that. Now, I don't know if I'm going to regret this. I weirdly brought in Joe Hart and then also at 5.0 brought in Fabianski, Chelsea goalkeeper, for no other reason than thinking about playing my bench boost at some point.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'm going to wait until there's a week where both of these guys are at home and I'm going to be tempted to then play that chip.
Yeah, that's I feel like the chips, I can't even see them right now. Like the chips to me are good. I can't imagine playing them for the next like 15 or 20 weeks. Like I feel like I'm definitely going to wait until we get some double game weeks. I'm just going to try to pretend they're not. I don't want to even be tempted by them until I get a double game week. I mean, I'm not saying that they have to be built around double game weeks, but it's just too early in the season. I feel like I don't know how anyone's going to perform yet. I mean, a lot of these teams. I mean, Man U is not going to be winning games 1-0 or drawing them 0-0 for too much longer, right? You'd think they'd figure it out. And once they do, it'll be more tempting to play those.
True that. Okay, let's please skip over the Watford-Southampton game. I like so many people throughout the last 2 years, get stuck on this Graziano Pelle train that just causes you to look into the mirror and question what reality is.
I couldn't do it. I had him for too many weeks last year. We didn't perform, and I couldn't get on the Pelé train.
So, can we quickly unpack this Arsenal Liverpool game? I mean, we could basically just bash Arsene Wenger for the next 5 minutes.
Well, so there's this kind of new argument that's come up, which is just that Arsenal weren't. They just haven't been accurate with their shooting. That they've had more shots on goal than any other team in the Premier League through the first 2 weeks of the season. But, or I should say, they've had more shots, not necessarily shots on goal. And they're just not making. There's not scoring. They're not being accurate. And I mean, you do see it in that game. I mean, that game was so open. Part of it was probably because Koscielny and Mertesacker were both. Dropped at the last minute for injury and illness. But that game could have been 3-3. You know, I mean, that game could have been a West Ham Bournemouth-style 4-3 game.
Yeah, Arsenal just lacks that viciousness. They lack the bite in front of goal. They seem very eager to make the next pass, but nobody seems really eager to postage stamp the ball past the goalkeeper.
I heard someone mention this. It may have been on a podcast, but it would be great to, like, you know, this kind of thing never happens, but it would be great to see a guy like Charlie Austin on Arsenal. Like, can you imagine just someone with a...
We've fallen like quite a ways from your Ibrahimovic call last podcast.
I'm getting desperate. You know, they just need another forward. I mean, they really don't have one. I mean, Theo Walcott is not a forward, and I mean, Chuba Akpom is now on Hull, so I don't know what Wenger's thinking. It's just it's so frustrating.
I don't either. I think he's waiting for that midfield to step up. But Sanchez, Ozil, Ramsey, they haven't been on target. I think less of the pressure needs to be on Giroud, even though he is the striker. He's the man that's meant to be scoring. But when Arsenal seem to really be clicking, they're just basically using Giroud as a backboard.
It's so frustrating. I mean, I know that, you know, strikers who score at will don't grow on trees, but God, you know, it sounded for a while like Higuain might have been back on the market. And I mean, even though that guy like never performs in the international level, he is a great league scorer. And, you know, someone like him would be interesting. I don't know.
I don't know if it's playing him out of position, but maybe they could just bring Poku over.
Oh, Poku. Oh, dare to dream.
Oh, yeah.
Poku. Sweet,
yeah.
Poku. NYCFC's God King.
So I was watching this game at work at my desk with on my cellular mobile telephone, and you know, I do the whole thing where it's the phone is facing down, and then when I hear the announcers' voices start to escalate, flip the phone over and see if I can see any action. So this is really what my life has come to. But I tuned in for a couple key moments. I saw Cech's save on Benteke, which was just so far out, man.
I mean, it was fantastic.
What a save! Yeah, if I had dumped Benteke with my wild card, and had I still had him, I think my bottom would have dropped out.
Just would have dropped right out.
Just dropped right out, right on the floor.
It was just a strange. I don't even know what to say about that game. Really, it was very strange. I guess because I actually had no players in that game, so for me, 0-0 was acceptable. So many people started Liverpool defenders in that game. I was kind of shocked because if I had a Liverpool defender, I would not have started them in that game, and it did work out for them. So
you feel like you could be so choosy with your defenders.
I like to. I mean, I like to bring in four and 4.5 million midfielders.
So do you do like a defenders? Wholesale defense transfer every week? You burn like 8 points on defenders every week?
No, I just felt like when I was wildcarding, I did spend a long time thinking about the next 5 or 6 weeks and what kind of defender rotations I wanted. It was so in terms of like total league standing, I guess it worked out okay because Ozil, Ramsey, Benteke, Alexis, none of them scored. And certainly all four of them could have. I mean, Aaron Ramsey did score and it should have counted.
It's basically just anyone with Joe Gomez or the oddball that's got Simon Mignolet back there were the ones that benefited.
Yeah, exactly. A lot of people have Nathaniel Klein, too. And he's someone I'm thinking about bringing in for next week because Liverpool do have a nice run coming up. So, yeah. Worked out okay.
Just as a little palate cleanser, Josh, I wanted to talk a little bit about the Wikipedia research I was doing earlier today. I was following some of the cup matches that were happening this afternoon among the 20. Well, there was like 21 different games happening, and I'm a Fulham fan, as everybody knows. And I was you always end up with this question about the history of your club, and you run to Wikipedia to try and answer it. Sure. And I was drawn to the bottom of the page, the section called Club Mascot Controversy. Now, let's be clear: there is no section of this Wikipedia for just the club mascot. There is only a section for club mascot controversy.
Okay.
And I just want to read this to you out loud, and I want you to take from it what you will. Okay. The Fulham mascot is Billy the Badger, who was the winning design sent in by Kyle Jackson after an online competition by the club. Billy the Badger wears the number 79 Fulham shirt in reference to the club's year of founding, 1879. Controversy first surrounded Billy when he tried to cheer up Chelsea manager Avram Grant during the home match in front of the television cameras. Secondly, Billy was seen on television being sent off during a home game against Aston Villa on Sunday the 3rd, February 2008, for breakdancing in the corner of the pitch after the referee had commenced the game. Billy blamed his badger hearing and eyesight for the incident and apologized to referee Chris Foy. On 11 March 2009, Billy walked across the goal during a match, though it was not spotted by the referee. The former mascot for Fulham was Sir Craven of Cottage, the knight. The scantily clad girl dancers were known.
A little emotional for a second there.
The scantily clad girl dancers were known as the Cravenettes. Now, I love how they just throw in the, they toss in the Cravenettes there in the controversy. In the controversy segment, with no editorializing of any kind. So, were the Cravenettes, were they controversial because they were scantily clad? I don't know. Who knows?
I don't know either.
And why don't they still have them? Crystal Palace, they have their dancers still, I think.
They're almost the only team that does, though, right? Like, very few teams have the. I mean, the cheerleader thing is a weird thing. It's really only in American football that you see it. Right, there are no cheerleaders in baseball. No cheerleaders
basketball. Basketball.
You have dancers though. I feel like dancers are. It's a little different, you know.
Unless you talk about college ball, because then you have cheerleaders. You have cheerleaders and dancers at a college basketball game.
I feel like this podcast might go 2 or 3 hours if we want to debate the difference between dancers and cheerleaders. I think basically cheerleaders are to cheer you up, and dancers are to bring you entertainment in between. Timeouts or something, right?
Yeah, so,
because they come out, they dance, but they're not really being, you know, they're not like, give us a whatever, you know?
I especially like
this. They look very serious when they're out there.
I know mascots are near and dear to your heart because on a former site that you and I worked on together, you did a 20-team breakdown of the best mascots in the Premier League. This was maybe like one or two seasons ago.
I think it's what really drove me away from that website, I think, too, is I probably spent 2 weeks putting that thing together. Like it was
a very serious breakdown about the generic appeal of each mascot, the cool factor, do kids like them?
I should have tried to get it published somewhere. I think the problem is that, you know, it like turned me away from Tumblr, I'll tell you that much. Because Tumblr, it's so unless you just want to see yourself out there, you know, like if being published with no feedback at all is what you're interested in, then Tumblr.
Yeah, you're basically just looking at straight metrics and in a very narrow capacity.
It's just likes and reposts, right? That's it. Like no one's ever like, hey, great job. It's just, hey, three people who you've never heard of, two of whom are bots, like this post.
Okay, so let's just jump right to game week 4, shall we? You want to run through these upcoming fixtures real quick?
Let's do it. We'll do this quick because we have somehow hit the hour mark. I'm not sure how we did that.
We're just good friends talking.
Yeah, I guess that's what it is. That's the bio on the iTunes page, right?
Absolutely. It will be now.
All right. So let's run through this in order. First game is Newcastle Arsenal. Theoretically, this would be a game when Arsenal could put 3 or 4 past them, even on the road. Newcastle looked pretty solid in the game against Man United.
They did. Coloccini really put that defense into shape. But do we have any faith that Newcastle can string two of those games together?
Well, do we have any faith that Arsenal can consistently score? I would predict something like 2-0 Arsenal, but it still seems like who's going to score? I mean, it would be interesting. I think there's a good chance that we see Theo Walcott in this game.
That would be great. I mean, I'm still fielding Mesut Ozil, and he didn't look as great in game week 3, but I'm hoping he involves himself in some fashion.
He still looked okay, I think. Yeah. Next game is Aston Villa Sunderland.
Barf.
Pretty good clean sheet potential here, I would think, for Aston Villa. Sunderland have scored. They've scored every game. So
Villa just went into extra time in their cup match today, and they ended up winning 4-3, I think it was.
Is that against Notts County or something?
So I don't. It's not
great.
Yeah,
they did
great.
Win though.
And St. Clair got a hat trick, so maybe you could ride his form, or they're just going to be tired or mentally broken down.
I actually added Ashley Westwood to my team during the wild card. He picked up a bonus point against Crystal Palace.
Gotta like that.
Yeah, so I think that he's probably going to start in place of Troy Deeney for that game. And I'll go 5 across the midfield. That's the current thinking.
All out attack.
All out attack. So we'll see. Next match is Bournemouth-Leicester. No idea what to expect here. Nil nil or 3-3. Would neither one would surprise me.
Yeah, Leicester can't seem to keep a clean sheet, but they've got the fight. I would guess they'll win. I think they'll win. I think Leicester is and they won 3-0 their cup match today, so they're still riding that form.
And you would think that Mahrez would be involved with more. He looks so solid right now.
Yeah, I have Albrighton sitting on my bench as well, and that's a good 1-2 punch if I feel like Leicester is really going to show up and turn the screws.
Yeah, I think if I had both of those guys, I would play both of them in that match.
Yeah. All right, who's next?
Chelsea, Crystal Palace. One keeps expecting a bounce back game from Chelsea, and this seems like a great opportunity for it to happen. I held the faith with Hazard. I did. I was rewarded with an assist, and this certainly seems like the kind of game where he would shine. So I'm really holding out hope that he will. I had actually thought about bringing in Diego Costa, and I was really kicking myself after his performance last weekend against West Brom, because he just looked so. It was kind of like he was rounding himself into shape. You know, the last couple weeks. It seemed like this.
We weren't as big as fans on the show last week, though.
No, we weren't. But I think I've changed my mind. I'm a new man.
You're a flip flopper.
Yeah, I'm a flip flopper. But at 11 million, I mean, unless you're wild carding, he's just a hard guy to bring in. I sort of tinkered with my team a little bit to see how I could do it. And it would really require three transfers, if I did a straight swap for Hazard if I brought out Hazard and brought in Costa, then I could do it in two moves. But then that kind of, what's the point, right? I mean,
The way Costa zeroed in on that goal that was assisted by Pedro, though, that is what we're talking about when we're talking about a striker for Arsenal. He was just a pure animal going for that ball, and there was no way they were not going to score a goal on that play, and he made sure of it. So that alone
agreed
would be enough for me to bring him in.
Next game is Liverpool-West Ham. I think West Ham look terrible at the moment. Liverpool look pretty good. You know, I mean, I think they've got to be happy with the draw there. I think the defense looked really good. Martin Skrtel looked fantastic. They're still not really scoring, but I could see this game being another like a 1-0 or a 2-0.
Yeah, given how rickety West Ham's defense was against Bournemouth, you have to be happy to have Benteke up front right now. He's got to be good for a goal this weekend.
Yep, agreed. Man City Watford is the next game.
Yeah, so this is the reason why you wouldn't captain Benteke in that game.
Yeah, it's because something like. I mean, all these various forums, right? Fantasy Football Scout, et cetera. Like, you're gonna see 80% of the people that frequent those sites captaining Aguero in this game. And it's so irresistible. I mean, at home to Watford, even though Watford have actually kept two clean sheets, that is just such a, like, you're licking your lips in anticipation of that.
Would you entertain the thought of captaining David Silva in this game?
Yeah, I would, actually. I think that would be kind of a cool differential move. I mean, it's just too early in the season for differentials, right? Yeah. I mean, like in week four, I feel like you just got to pick the one player who you think is going to do the best. I mean, I guess I do feel like I'm trying to make up ground like overall. So, you know, if I really cared about my overall rank, if I really wanted to climb into the top 1,000 this year or something like that, maybe I would go for Silva. But, I just think Aguero is the obvious choice.
Yeah. Keep your sights set on the top 2 million for the time being.
Yeah, indeed.
Who's next?
Next game is Stoke West Brom, and that game, I don't know. I mean, West Brom looked actually okay.
I would be excited to watch this game. West Brom looked really well organized against Chelsea. They showed a lot of determination to stay in that game despite totally blowing it with the missed penalty that would have changed the entire shape of things.
Yeah.
And Stoke the same deal. They look like a resilient, organized, mentally tough, confident squad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
two great managers.
Yeah, I could see this being a 1-1 game, and they're also really close to each other. I think Stoke and West Brom are like maybe 60 miles away.
Yeah, I guess
that is in kilometers, 75 kilometers.
I think I'm thinking about this too much from a fan perspective. Yeah, from the fantasy perspective, I don't know what's worth playing here. I mean, maybe you just have to go for a clean sheet.
I have Jack Butland, so I'm certainly planning to play him in this game. And, you know, I think that maybe, you know, if you had one of those 4.5 million Stoke defenders, he'd be worth playing in this game as well.
What about Rondon? Rondon's going to – he was just warming up against Chelsea.
Yeah, he looked pretty good. So, yeah, another one to keep an eye on.
He's gonna snatch that clean sheet right away from you.
I know, he's gonna jam it right up
Butland's butt.
I can already imagine it. I can envision it. The last game on Saturday is Spurs Everton at 12:30 Eastern. That is.
So can we agree that we just want to see Spurs go down in flames as quickly as possible? They're not a terribly likable team right now.
They really aren't. I know. I'm just so done with that team at the moment. I mean, it never changes with them. And a lot of people in our fantasy league are Spurs fans, but it's even they feel the same way, right? I mean, this team is just not fun to watch right now.
Yeah, I was head-to-head against somebody this week who had captained Harry Kane, and I would have banked on Harry Kane scoring a goal against Leicester.
There's just, yeah, I mean, once Christian Eriksen was out, it really didn't look good for Kane.
I guess Kane, on the goal that Spurs actually did end up scoring, Ali. Mm-hmm. Bamidele Ali. You could see the reason he scored that was Kane got the ball and drew like all four Leicester defenders to him like a magnet, and the ball popped out, and it was more or less an open net.
Yeah.
So I mean, while Kane is to credit, people are just playing him so hard right now.
Yeah, and Ali is 4.9. So I guess if he started playing more consistently, he'd be one to keep an eye out for.
But yeah.
I don't know what to expect from this game. I really don't. I mean, I think that I actually would expect Everton to win this game, maybe like, you know, 2-0 or 2-1, something along those lines.
I'm going with your prediction on this one.
Yeah. Then we come to Sunday. The first game is Southampton Norwich. Southampton looked a lot better yesterday or last week against Watford. Still aren't scoring, but the defense finally came together, which you would have expected, right? I mean,
yeah, after everyone dumped all their Southampton defensive assets, yeah, they, of exactly. course, came together.
Yeah. And Norwich looked really good in that game. You know, you'd think, I mean, Nathan Redmond just looks so solid right now. He's playing really far forward.
Nene.
Yeah. So, that one's like, you know, I don't know, 1-1. Probable scoreline there.
It would be great to have a nice open game here, high scoring.
Yeah. And then the final game is no Sunday games this week. The final game is Swansea Man United. And
no Monday game, you mean?
No Monday game. What did I say? Sunday?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, no Monday game this week. I'm getting tired. You know, I'm tired. I'm hungry.
It's been a long podcast.
We're at the last fixture. Yeah, no Monday game this week. It's the
final
Sunday
game. We do have like 34 more weeks to go, 35 more weeks to go. So just brace yourself.
So Swansea have looked excellent all year. Man United have looked defensively solid but haven't really scored. You would think they'd have to open up a little bit in this game to win it, which could be really good for Memphis Depay. But, you know, I mean, I wouldn't put past Gomez to score in this game as well. It's really this should be a fascinating game. I'm really excited about this one.
I predict that Jonjo Shelvey will score a 35-yard screamer.
You're gonna say a 35-year-old screamer.
He will shoot a 35-year-old man into the goal screaming.
Only a 35-year-old can score that goal.
No, I'm predicting a screamer, the eyeglasses celebration, and then Man United will weirdly level a fluke late goal to tie it 1-1.
All right, that sounds about right. All right, Brandon, I think we've covered it.
Anyone who has stuck with us
know about the fantasy league.
Yeah, if you've stuck with us this long, you are going to be very well prepared going into game week 4.
Definitely true.
We do have really good news. We have a new podcast feed on iTunes, so you have to go and resubscribe to Always Cheating on iTunes. Now you can go search Always Cheating or Always Cheating Fantasy Premier League. Go there and subscribe and rate and review if you're so kind. That would be awesome.
Yep, we're also on SoundCloud and on Stitcher.
Stitcher Radio, yeah, you can subscribe there as well. And on social media, where can we be found, Josh?
We can be found, we're at Hail Cheaters on Twitter or alwayscheating.com.
Yeah, awesome. And we've got a new little logo look going on. If you hate it, let us know. If you love it, let us know. Yeah, but... we'll have more podcasts coming to you next week.
All right. I'm excited. Talk to you later, Brandon.
Yeah, good luck.
Yep, thanks. You too.